Welcome to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
What time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed, headed into a magical, momentous Memorial Day Monday. 800-224-2004. Call on the show, tell us what you like, tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listeners. So make sure you call in 800-224-2004 at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, wherever else you get your podcast listening systems. We got you covered 24/7, 365 days out of the year. And do me one more favor. Make sure you download the SportsMap Radio app, carry it in your pocket throughout your day, so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing. We have a fun 3 hours that always seem to fly right on by. How are we doing this morning, everybody? Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there, to those of you who gave a beautiful sacrifice of your life to fight for our freedom. Thank you for your service. Today's show specifically on Memorial Day. Make sure you call in 800-224-2004. If you are a veteran, if you are somebody who has a veteran in your family, tell the great stories of those who may have paid the ultimate sacrifice here. This is a Memorial Day show. We want to remember those who fought for our freedom. We want to remember everybody out here, so please make sure that you call in. Please know that we don't forget any of this, but we have a lot to get to on today's show. We don't have a lot of time to really waste because we know what's happening tonight. There's so much going on in the world of sports that even though we are celebrating a beautiful holiday, we still got something big going on. Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Something that feels synonymously almost impossible to be talking about is actually unfolding. Let's also talk a little bit about the coaching carousel in the likes of the NBA. A hire was made up in Milwaukee. We now have two head coaching openings still. That which one needs a little bit more of a gusto hire to be able to get their team back on track in 2023-2024? And which team would the Denver Nuggets want to face off against in a 7-game showdown for a shot to lift their own first NBA Finals trophy? But we begin not on Monday morning. We have to turn back the clocks roughly about 36 hours ago. To where it felt like, in an instant, Boston had a win. Boston was going to pull off everything. Boston was ready for a Game 7. And then Jimmy Butler happened. And then Jimmy Butler gets fouled. And then Jimmy Butler goes to the line. And as clutch as a performance you can get from a guy who has led your team all the way from the brink of elimination against the Windy City franchise, the team that he called home, being drafted out of Marquette, to now taking a 1-point lead with less than 4 seconds on the clock. This is where the game comes to an end. This is where Miami makes history. This is where Miami gets to go ahead and end their season of the regular part before a winner-take-all spit-swap and showdown against the Denver Nuggets begins to unfold. And then this happens.
Inbound to Smart, turns and shoots the three, left wing, around, and out, Miami! As a tip was good at the end, but I think the buzzer sounded. We're waiting to get an official ruling. There was a tip, and they count it! Oh, they count the tip, and Boston wins it!
Just tried to get it to a spot where we can take one or two dribbles and get a shot, and they did a good job of denying with the inbounder, which is always a hard read. But at the end of the games like that, you know, we always, our guys talk about just crashing at the end of the game, giving it a chance. And D-White made a great play. Smart made a great play getting open to get a shot off. And, you know, D-White made a great play.
I was passing it in. Vincent was on me, and he kind of was up top denying JT, so I couldn't get hit the ball. And I did a good job of denying JB too, and Smart flashed, hit him, and there really was nobody on me. So I just spaced to the corner, and then when he shot it, just tried to crash. Ball came to me. I made a shot, so that's what I saw.
ESPN Radio with the call, Joe Mazzulla, Derek White as well, discussing a 104-103 victory from the brink of elimination. Now to a winner-take-all showdown back at the Garden. Game 7 tonight up in Boston. For the first time since 2003, a team has made the complete comeback to get down 0-3 and bring it back to a must-win Game 7 for either side. For the first time ever in NBA history, something will occur tonight. A team that started off as the 8th seed in the playoffs will either represent the Eastern Conference against Denver, or for the first time in 11 tries, one team down 0-3 is going to go ahead and complete the comeback. 800-224-2004. This is monumental for multiple reasons because of, I said on this show right before I left, and I had a good holiday weekend, thank you all for asking, that I did not believe that momentum had shifted in favor of Boston just yet. I couldn't believe it. Why should I believe it? Look at the way that Boston has played it throughout the entire postseason. They've rattled off compelling wins, but they've only had really one great win in every single series. They physically outbeat Atlanta in Game 4. I mean, game 2. Physically, just completely dominated them. Against the 76ers, they completely dominated them in Game 7, and really they had a decent game, I would say, in Game 2 to tie the series at 1-1, but nothing to really write home about in that Game 2. It was that Game 7 51 burger from a guy named Jason Tatum, the face of your franchise, that really set the tone. And then you have, of course, that Game 4, that game to where you know you have to win to keep your season alive. You're playing on the road. You're playing down at the 305. Miami is rocking and rolling. And all you have to do is just keep hope and momentum going. Well, they do. Then they get a 110-97 win at home. And now, 104-103 victory. I have to be completely honest. My momentum has shifted. Do I think that Miami can win this game? Absolutely. You have one of the biggest postseason heroes we have seen in over a decade plus with Jimmy Butler on one side. You have a physical defense, and you have a roster that has been here before with the same type of course motion. But to be fair, you need to win in Game 6. To be able to play on the road in a must-win showdown, in a game that truly will not be mattered in the course of quick minutes or easy points or second shot attempts, the last thing you want to do is add more pressure onto your team. And to be the away team, after being up 3-0, after being up and ready to go ahead and claim your title, after being all the way, completely, financially, physically more dominant, to be able to do that and then put yourself now on the cusp of having to play in the worst environment that you ever could imagine, it's hard to go ahead and say that Boston does not have the advantage in this game. Now, you have to think about this for a second. What version of Boston are we getting? Are we going to get the one that we saw back in Game 5, where they came out swinging? They were easily the more physically team, they were easily the more sound team, and they set the course very early on, 36 points in that first quarter. Then they had an 8-point lead at halftime. They did allow a team like Miami to come back starting in the third quarter, but that was really about it. Afterwards, they found their rhythm back in the fourth, and the last 12 minutes felt like Boston, 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 buckets, buckets, buckets. What version are we getting? Are we getting that one? Or are we getting the Game 1 version where, hey, we know we're a higher seed. We know we have the talent. We know what we are as an organization. But nobody knew what you were going to do because of the way that you played. Didn't matter if you looked like a 1 seed or a 2 seed. It made you look like the weaker opponent in a game. If that's the version of Boston you're going to get tonight, you're not going to get a win. But if you get the one where clean shots are coming out, where everyone is finding their niche role, Marcus Smart plays exceptional defense against Jimmy Butler, against Gary Vincent, against Gabe Vincent, against all these other role players, why shouldn't momentum be in favor of Boston? Right now, they are on a 3-0 series lead. And that's the way that you have to break this down, people, is that two courses of this game have occurred in the span of a week and a half. First half, Miami, physical, dominant, defensively sound. We're able to go ahead and get clean shots, but also break away second shot attempts for a team like Boston. and they took a 3-0 series lead. Now you're seeing the exact same notion and the formula be carbon copied and printed over to the team that I've said from the get-go. More talent, more consistency, more star power, more role players, more physical presence on the court, at least through the regular season. You've seen that happen for the last three games. So what do you do going into this game? You clear the table. You have to clear the table for this. You cannot expect what has happened the last three games to carry over into Game 7. But you also can't expect, if you're a Miami Heat fan, that the team that you saw to start the course and put this motion in rhythm, that we are not just going to go down quietly. We know who we are as a roster. We know what we bring to the table elementally. We know that we have enough star power, even though they're all undrafted players and has-been names and players that probably would be, you would only hear of in the G League or overseas. You got to throw that out of the motion too. This is now who wants it more. How bad do you want to be your champion of the Eastern Conference Finals? How quickly can you make up those mental mistakes in the first period so they don't transpire to the second, so they don't occur in the third, to where you feel that in any single motion, you're now on top? That's the last thing you want to do if you are a team like Boston, or a team like Miami for that matter. It's going to be a compelling series. It's going to be something that I don't think anybody can expect. And let's be real. We know that nobody's getting slided out of this one or shafted out of this one because of, in three different instances, Miami had a chance to close it out. They couldn't capitalize. On three different instances, Boston had to play with their back against the wall, knowing if they lose, they go home. They live to the occasion. Now we are 48 minutes away from an Eastern Conference champion, and a winner-take-all showdown is about to...
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Inbound to Smart. Turns and shoots the three, left wing. Around and out. Miami! As a tip was good at the end, but I think the buzzer sounded. There was a tip and they count it. Oh, they count the tip and Boston wins it.
I thought we had a lot of things covered on that play, and that sometimes things just don't break your way. I don't think there's any regrets on that. It's just a shame, you know.
I believe, as we all do, like, you're going to get the same test until you pass it. I swear. We're in the same position last year. We can do it. I know that we will do it.
That being ESPN Radio with the call, Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler as well, discussing a 104-103 loss to the Boston Celtics and a winner-take-all showdown occurring in the TD Garden tonight. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Tons. We're just saying it right here on a Memorial Day Monday. Call into the show, 800-224-2004. This Memorial Day, I want to make sure we reach out to all of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. If you have somebody in your family that you want to talk about that fought overseas, that you want to remember their legacy, please call in. And if you are a veteran, thank you for your service on today. What is legacy? What defines a legacy of a player? Is it one great performance? Is it a spellbounding career with one organization? Is it simply just a moment that you can't make up, even if you wrote it in Hollywood scripts? They brought it into editing. They made sure that with CGI technology, it was the greatest spectacle you could ever see. Is that a legacy? Or is it just one moment to capitalize? Jimmy Butler is about to find that out. This entire postseason, the Miami Heat have been relegated on Jimmy Butler's success. And I don't think that I'm too far-fetched to say that that is a truth. Not to say that I don't think that there have been great role players like Caleb Martin and Gabe Vincent and even Bam Adebayo has stepped up. But at the same time, everything goes through number 22. 2-2 needs one shot and one opportunity to capture this moment, as Eminem once said. Because if you realize what he's meant to this roster, there's no way that Miami is here. Miami is a team that has to go through the ringer every single night. And I mean that in a turn because of, look at their roster as a whole. They were an organization that went sour midseason. right around the trade deadline, things started to go a little bit haywire. They didn't do much to add in talent. They were just the same old ragtag team that we saw from a season ago. But because of that, and other teams started adding a few more pieces, they got hot at right moments, you notice that there was a little bit of a drop-off. So they didn't get into the play-in tournament. They had to go immediately into that next, they didn't get into the round of six. They had to go into the play-in tournament. After that, they had to get a compelling, horrendous, absolutely astronomical loss to Atlanta, which would have put them as the number seven seed, then had to face off against Chicago as the eight seed. Then they rattled off wins against Milwaukee. Then they battled and did wonders against New York. And in every single one of those games, Jimmy Butler was the reason why. Jimmy Butler, without his performance, especially against Milwaukee, does not even have an opportunity for a organization like Miami to be in this moment. His legacy for this postseason is secure. This will be one of the more spellbounding, excellent, dynamic, cohesive performances we have ever seen in a postseason run in recent memory. It will be. However, the thing is about in today's society, no one cares about the buildup. If I were to tell you my entire life story of how I got into radio, how I went through a long period of dealing with drama and speculation and things off course and being told by multiple people in my life, why are you still trying to chase a dream that few people ever accomplish? You want to be on national radio? Good for you, dude. So does every other person your age at 22 walking out of college with bright eyes and a bushy tail saying, I can take on the world. And you know how many of those people are now working 9-to-5 jobs, are now doing the daily dosage of business life? They've left the industry altogether. And some of them are even more talented than me. I'll be very openly honest about that. But that drive and that will has forced me to continue to move forward. There's a lot of other bumps and bruises along the way, but you don't really care about that. Nobody in today's society cares about that. Nobody will ever sit down and want to hear your story. They want to hear the end result. And that's what Jimmy Butler faces tonight. Nobody will care about what Jimmy Butler has done this postseason for Miami, being able to keep this team afloat when they were downtrodden after a loss to Atlanta, when they found ways to capitalize against a Giannis-less open Milwaukee Bucks team, how they were able to rattle off win after win, keep it composed against a New York Knicks team that seemed to be one of those rosters on the rise. Nobody will care about any of that if Jimmy Butler does not come out on top tonight, if Miami does not come out on top tonight. So in a sense, yes, there is a legacy factor added into Jimmy Butler's career. It's not the same as LeBron James. LeBron can walk away from the court tonight. He can never play another game of basketball. And we will always know him as one of the greatest shooters of our generation, one of the more dynamic ball players to really transcend the NBA into a new course of basketball that we've seen today. And he will forever be exonerated as the number one player when it comes to shooting and scoring. That's what LeBron James' legacy will be. He also has a couple of rings to go ahead and show off for it. Two in Miami, one in Cleveland, one in Los Angeles. His legacy is secure. Where every other player who does not have top 10 accolades, another other player who doesn't have multiple MVPs attached to their name, every other player who hasn't been a first-team All-NBA dozens of times throughout their career is certainly going to have to deal with these other speculations. And this isn't to say that anything can change in an instant. Jimmy Butler easily could be back here next season, leading this same Miami Heat team, maybe a little bit more healthy would be the right word, but star power, star-driven. Miami's a great place. I can tell you this right now. If I'm a free agent, I have money, and I don't need to take a lucrative contract, why would I not want to go down to the 305? Why would I not want to play with an organization that basically has been like the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of continuity and cohesiveness for decades plus? They're the one team every single year when you look at going into the postseason, yep, they're going to be right there in the conversation. They may not win it. They may not be the team that ends up hoisting up the title at the end of the day, but you know they're going to have a shot because that's how well-built internally the organization has been. That's how fundamentally sound Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra have worked together to build this roster and build a great culture, a long-standing culture. But Jimmy Butler right now is not worried about next season. He's not worried about what could come in the future. He's worried about what happened last season, where a shot ultimately set Miami home and allowed Boston to move on to the NBA Finals, only to be upset by a Golden State Warriors team that once again has really cemented its legacy as a dynasty. He's not worried about what could occur in 2024 when they maybe go out there and they add in a free agent, you get a Tyler Hero back, a Victor Oladipo, who's a great role player off the bench, gives you valuable minutes, consistency with points, does a lot of great things as a fundamentally player rather than a starter. You don't worry about that. You worry about the here and the now. And the now says, if Jimmy Butler does not have a great performance tonight, no one will care about the rest of the story. No one will care about his impact this postseason. No one will have a second thought or an opinion of what occurred in this matchup. Nobody's going to be sitting at home 20 years from now wondering what the hell happened to LeBron James against Denver. They're going to say Denver dominated. Denver had a shot to hoist up an NBA Finals trophy. And if Nikola Jokic wins his first NBA title, his legacy is going to be secured in the Mile High City as one, if not the greatest nugget to ever grace the court. But that's LeBron James' story. This is not Jimmy Butler's story. You can say the exact same thing about a whole bunch of other players in the NBA. Steph Curry is one of them. Steph Curry will go down, in my opinion, as the greatest three-point shooter of my generation. And this includes a guy like Ray Allen, who was just as dominant and has some of the biggest shots in NBA Finals history. But the consistency of what Steph Curry did allows him to not worry about what happens in the postseason. A guy like Jimmy Butler doesn't have that notion just yet. He doesn't have an NBA Finals trophy attached to his name. And it goes down with some of these great historic players in every professional sport. Perfect example, this is Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald will go down in history as one of the greatest receivers to ever grace a football field. Not just because he was an incredible route runner, but because he was an excellent locker room persona. And he was somebody that people wanted to do battle with. The one thing not attached to his name in a Hall of Fame career, Super Bowl title. And that's what some people will remember Larry Fitzgerald as. Guy who did it all. Guy who was phenomenal, but never could get to the big game. Never could win that final game. That's what Jimmy Butler is playing for. He was honest last night, on Saturday night. Said, if I play better, if I have a more solid game to start off, and he did not have the best game of his career, if I have a more complete performance, we're not even in this situation. But the guy has been cool, he's been calm, he's kept his composure, he's never once felt rattled in a moment to where he thinks that his team is now the underdog. The problem is that this was all leading up to a game 6 at home, a game they had to win. You want to talk about a legacy and an impact? If Jimmy Butler in Miami wins this series, we're talking about a different type of player.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
In a 7-game series, it's all about matchups. It's all about finding the right players to go toe-to-toe with your own roster. And there's already one team that we know is guaranteed to play in an NBA Finals come next week or later on this week. But who should the Denver Nuggets want to face off against in a 7-game showdown for a shot at their first NBA title? 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, which is saying it right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Do me a favor and download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, wherever else you get your podcast listening systems, and download the SportsMap Radio app. Carry it in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there celebrating. For anybody who is a veteran, thank you for your service. And for anybody that would like to call into the show, talk about their family, talk about somebody who ultimately paid their sacrifice, on today's show, we would like to honor those who ultimately gave their life and did everything possible to make sure we have freedom. So please call into the show. Love to hear from you. But let's go ahead and talk about the Denver Nuggets. Denver is a team that right now is very well rested. Not only that, Denver is a team that's very well prepared. You have to realize something. When you're waiting for a playoff series to begin or the next round to occur, and you now have a good couple of days to really sit back and watch the nuances of things that are unfolding, here's the best part. You, my friend, have an advantage because of what you're doing is you're not worried about watching multiple things. You're worried about watching three big things: offense, defense, and timely plays. That's all you're watching for in these postseason series. And for a team like Denver, they really don't have to worry about much other notions outside of two big factors. Or is it going to be Denver? I mean, is it going to be Boston's offense that they have to worry about? Or is it going to be Jimmy Butler? Is it going to be the defensive side and the defensive consistency of a team like Boston? Or is it going to be dealing with the Miami Heat team that has been a little bit hit or miss? So here's my thought process. Who's the team that Denver should want to face off against in a seven-game showdown? Well, offensively, the better of the two teams, not just through the regular season, but through the postseason, when they're hot, has been Boston. Regular season, average 117.3 points per game. That was roughly about 6 points more than Denver. Defensively is where I think that you're really going to have a component. Defensively is where I really think that you're going to have to worry about certain other factors. Points allowed is a big key element for me. And when you look at these two teams, they match up pretty well between Boston and Denver. Boston allowed an average of 111.4 points per game. Denver allowed about 112.5. When you look at a team like Miami, they actually were the better defensive team throughout the regular season, 109.8. They also held opponents to roughly 47.7% for the field. A team like Boston held to 48.3. Denver, meanwhile, held teams to about 47.8. So in terms of field goal percentage, they match up pretty well. Three-pointers made, Boston allowed roughly about 11.6, where Miami allowed about 13.1. Field goal percent, three-point percentage, 36.7 in favor of Miami, 34.5 in favor of Boston. So Boston allowed fewer three-point attempts, but Miami allowed fewer points. What does this correlate to in my personal belief? Well, it comes down to two main things. Do you feel like the star power of your roster can go toe-to-toe with the star power of another team's roster? Here's what we know about Miami. Miami is the exact same team that we saw last year, minus a few key players. And part of that is just based off of free agency, and part of that is just based off of injury. No Tyler Hero. He's been out since the game one of the Eastern Conference early playoffs when he got hurt against Milwaukee. No Victor Oladipo. He's been out since really the end of the regular season, was never going to play in this postseason no matter what. Hero was kind of on the fence. Nobody, I think, actually thought he was going to play anywhere up until the NBA Finals. Broken hand, you can't really do a lot of stuff with that. But maybe you could be healthy enough after 5.5 weeks to get back out on the court and even come off the bench and 8 to 10 minutes of action, just be able to drain a few threes, play a little bit of defense. Do you think that the star power of Gabe Vincent, of Bam Adebayo, of Caleb Martin, of Max Struss, of Duncan Robinson, do you feel like that star power is enough for a team like Miami to go toe-to-toe with a Nikola Jokic, with a Jamal Murray, with a KCP, with potentially even you could throw in a name like I would say a Michael Porter Jr., who is very hit or miss, but he's really sharp behind the three-point line, and definitely you don't want to go face him toe-to-toe downtown. Do you feel like that's enough to correlate and keep you in the running? Or do you feel like that you meet a better matchup against a Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? Honestly, probably the best 1-2 combination remaining in the postseason outside of 27 and 15. Do you feel like the defense led by Marcus Smart, led by Al Horford, led by Robert Williams, Jaylen Brown, do you feel like that defense is going to negate great plays and excellent consistency from the likes of a Nikola Jokic, from a Jamal Murray, from a KCP, from all these other role players, Aaron Gordon for that matter? It all comes down to matchups, formations. And for me personally, I feel like that if I was a team like Denver, I would want to be going up against a team like Miami. And it's not because of I don't think Miami is a worse team than Boston. I've been on record multiple times since the start of the postseason and since the start of the series. Fundamentally, I believe that Boston is a more sound team. They have better star power. I don't have to worry about Jason Tatum dropping 35 a night for me to be able to walk away victorious. I need to think that Jimmy Butler's got to give me a certain number of points, certain number of assists, probably near a double-double for my team to walk away with the victory. I can trust Jaylen Brown to go ahead and give me 25 one night and then get 15 the next, because Jason Tatum is probably going to get me 18 one night and then 34 the next. I can trust that I'm going to have great defensive play for Marcus Smart at times. I can trust that the guys like Derek White and Malcolm Brogdon and other role players are going to step up in the right moment to keep my team afloat. I can trust all that. I technically can't trust that with, I think, a team like Miami. And the biggest thing is that momentum. Momentum is a tremendous thing in your favor if you are an organization going into the postseason. When you are hot, I can tell you right now, you are going to be scorching. And nobody is going to want to face you because they don't know what exactly is the correlation to stop you. Perfect example of this. This past weekend, I had to cover SEC baseball. So I was watching Texas A&M, which was a 10th seed in the SEC standings. They rattled off 4 wins against ranked opponents to play against Vanderbilt. And even though they didn't win the SEC tournament, a lot of people around the diamond and around college baseball now know if A&M's pitching can stay hot, they're going to be a threat to go all the way back to Omaha. And that's a big, big deal, because that momentum is going to carry over into the regionals. And if it continues, to the super regionals. The same thing can be said about Boston right now. Boston, they're shooting better from the three-point line. They are taking a lot of shots from downtown, which I do think is going to be the ultimate downfall of them tonight if they don't start getting buckets. That's a big key factor here that I don't think enough people are talking about. They had, once again, a huge, I think it was 31 three-point attempts in Game 6. You can't have a 28% three-point percentage and just trust that you're going to be able to correlate that over. But the big thing is that if you get back to small ball fundamentals and those little things and those nuances that really put you on the market to begin, I think that Boston right now has an advantage. And the main reason why is because of they have been playing with their backs against the wall, a winner-take-all mentality, a nothing-left-to-lose mantra, to where they know going up against a Nikola Jokic, going up against Jamal Murray, two players that vastly, I feel like, are underappreciated in the NBA. Jokic probably isn't, but my digression, because of the way that he didn't win the MVP this year, certainly I think factors into my sentiment with it. When you look at that, the last thing that you also want is that battle-tested proof. Listen, there's not many people in the history of professional sports, period, that can say, hey, not only did I come down 0-3, I came back and won the whole shindig. I figured a way to get my formula at the right time to where no one was able to stop me. I rattled off 8 consecutive wins to where I was back on top, and I knew exactly what I was doing right was not going to be stopped. That's a big thing. There's few teams in professional sports, period, throughout the 100-plus years that can say that occurred. And you know what? Maybe it will happen for a team like Boston. But if Boston does have the momentum, the other thing that's a really big factor is because if they've been playing so hot right now, that's going to carry over. And because they won't have a lot of time to recuperate, to rest, to be able to kind of take a breather, look back at the postseason, say, here's what we did right, here's what we did wrong, what do we have to worry about against a team like Denver? No, they already are in motion. Their brains are already wired to be able to go play into another series. And that sometimes is a huge plus and a positive for an organization, and sometimes it's a negative. But because of the way that Miami has been playing as of late, Denver should be hoping for a Game 7 win for the Heat.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Let's go around the coaching carousel of the NBA as one more hire has been made and another vacancy has been filled. 800-224-2004 at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, or wherever else you get your podcast listening systems. And make sure you download the SportsMap Radio app, carry us in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The Milwaukee Bucks no longer have to worry about who's going to be coaching them in 2023-2024 as Adrian Griffin, former assistant of the Toronto Raptors underneath Nick Nurse, is set to become the next franchise's head coach, taking over from Mike Budenholzer after an abysmal performance in round one of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Naturally, Griffin is somebody that people were targeting. He was a name that was mentioned for multiple jobs this offseason. So it doesn't come as a shock that this is a team that now has found their leader to hopefully keep this roster afloat. The biggest thing right now for a team like Milwaukee is what do you do with the rest of the roster? You know that you're going to keep Giannis, but everyone else kind of up for grabs right now. Jrue Holiday, Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton. You can either punt down the road and hope for better results and build around Giannis with younger tier role players who probably aren't going to get you the same amount of buckets but will cost you less money. Or you can try and run it back with several of those stars and let a few walk in free agency. Milwaukee as a whole, though, does have that ace, that key factor, that element that's going to keep them at least in postseason contention. And his name is Giannis Antetokounmpo, where the two teams that I'm really focusing in on for their next hire, I feel like have star power, but they each need a great coach to lead this team. It's Phoenix and it's Philadelphia. But what team needs a better coach right now to keep their cohesion and their dominance alive and well for, let's just say, another two seasons? When you look at Phoenix right now, Phoenix does have three elements to their roster. Number one, they have Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is not slowing down. I do think that he still has about two or three great years left in him. And I know that he's getting up there in age, but let's be real for a second. KD is still KD. He's not going to go away without a swan song. He's going to do everything in his power to stay healthy, stay active, and stay physical. They also have Devin Booker. And Devin Booker right now is the face of Phoenix basketball. You can make an argument that he's the face of all of Arizona sports for that matter. You still have DeAndre Ayton, but I do think that Ayton's time in the Valley is getting close to an end. He's going to get traded this offseason. Someone's going to pay an arm and a leg, whether that be in first-round picks, improving commodities, and role players, that should make this bench a lot better. And that, my friends, was the biggest downfall of Phoenix this postseason. Go back and watch that series against Denver. Did you notice something about Denver? They always had a second or third player that was able to come off and give you 7 to 10 valuable minutes to where if your starter was having a rough moment where you weren't getting great play from, say, a KCP or a Michael Porter Jr., you knew that you were going to be good. Whether that be with Bruce Brown, whether that be with someone else, you knew that you were pretty good at that spot. You didn't have that with Phoenix. So I do think understanding moving off of a guy potentially like Chris Paul, moving off a guy like DeAndre Ayton would make sense because you still have your dynamic duo with KD and Devin Booker. In Philadelphia, you have Tyrese Maxey. And I do think that Tyrese Maxey has done enough to at least put him in the conversation of a low-tier number two. You want him as your number three, but if you had to play him as your number two, he's made enough sound and enough noise to where I'd feel confident building my roster around him. And you have Joel Embiid, the reigning MVP. However, I do feel like when you look at the expectations, primarily in the Eastern Conference, this is where coaching really comes into detail. Look at the rosters right now that are going to be physically dominant next season. You still have Boston. I know that Joe Mazzulla had an 0-3 lead and he worked his way back. That's all fine and dandy. But this is still a team that will feature, until further notice, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. They also have great role players like Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon. They have guys who are going to be back on this roster next season to make a run. Same thing can be said about Miami. Miami's not losing Jimmy Butler. They're not losing Tyler Hero. They're not losing Bam Adebayo. And Eric Spoelstra is basically Mike Tomlin. He's going to get you consistency. He's going to be a guy that finishes above 500. They may end up being the 6th or 7th seed, but they're not going down quietly. You have another team, the New York Knicks. This, my friends, is a roster that I can tell you right now, they're a piece away. I don't know what that piece is. If you go ahead and make a trade for a Carl Anthony Towns, maybe make a phone call to see if DeAndre Ayton could be made available. Something along those lines, I think, will correlate and give you that extra oomph to pair alongside an RJ Barrett. Maybe a move off of Julius Randle. But you have your go-to guy in Jalen Brunson. They're a team on the rise, in my opinion. Another team that I want to monitor is Cleveland. Cleveland's biggest fault this past offseason, or this past season, was This was a roster that had not played together in the postseason. Yeah, Donovan Mitchell was a star when he was in Utah, but he never played with Evan Mobley. He never played with Jared Allen. He never played with Darius Garland. But now that he has, and now that they've been able to show where the faults were throughout the regular season, they know where to go ahead and build moving forward. I still believe in Cleveland a lot. So you need great coaching in Philadelphia, because if you don't have that, you're going to be left in the pack. Yeah, you can have the superstar in Giannis. I mean, you can have the superstar in Joel Embiid. Certainly, you can have a great shooter like Tyrese Maxey, or an adequate shooter would probably be the better words. But you still need a few more bits and bruises for you to stay alive. This is not enough for you to say, oh, we just have the talent to be able to win. And it goes back to that whole Brooklyn Nets thing a few years ago. Anybody remember that conversation when Steve Nash was running the show and everyone was saying inside the locker room, do we really even need Steve Nash? Do we need a coach? Why don't we just go out there and deliver compelling performances, great sophistication, excellent outings, and command dominance? You didn't have that. And the main reason why? Bad coaching. Coaching does matter. In the Western Conference, where really is that superstar team? Sure, you could say right now that Denver is the great team to beat, and you would not be technically wrong. I definitely think that right now the biggest problem here is that with a team like Denver, Denver is certainly going to be at the forefront until further notice, but it is a small market. And I don't mean that in terms of negativity. Denver is a great city. But name the last time you saw star players sign up and leave organizations to go play for the Nuggets. You see them go to LA all the time. You see them certainly go out to Miami. You'll see them go to New York. You'll see them go to Brooklyn. You'll see them go to these major cities and metropolitans. But Denver's not that ideal location. You also have a couple of other teams. How much longer is this Golden State Warriors roster willing to stay together? Who's going to be back next season? Will Klay be back in the lineup? Will you have Draymond Green? Are you going to have a new start with Steph Curry as your foundation, despite him being 35 years old? You also have a team like the Lakers. Is this the year where finally Rob Pelinka doesn't worry about bringing in role players, but goes for that star power? And does that include potentially trading away an Anthony Davis who can't stay healthy for a full 82 games in the regular season, let alone 50 games in the regular season? That way you have more consistency. Never forget, Los Angeles was a roster that at one point was on the outside looking in. So far so, they were basically a microscope in the Western Conference standings near the bottom cellar of all teams. They had to go make abundance of trades to be able to put themselves in the conversation just for a play-in game. And take nothing away from what Los Angeles did this past offseason. They were phenomenal down the stretch, and they did enough to keep themselves afloat. But make no mistake either, this is still an organization that had faults and flaws, and it was very evident in a four-game showdown of the Western Conference Finals. Yeah, you're going to have some players that you want to bring back. You also have a few more players that you know you need to keep. But who else is out there? Could you say Miami? Could you say Minnesota? Could you say Memphis with all the drama going on there? Sacramento feels like a team on the rise, but they're kind of in the same category as Denver right now, where it's not a major market when it comes to free agents. You're not going to see a lot of guys, I think, go there unless they're buying into the combination of Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox. So I think that when you're a team like Phoenix, if you get a coach like Nick Nurse in the building, or you get a Mike Budenholzer for that matter, somebody that has been able to not just win an NBA Finals, but lead his team with this type of star power before, I think that you're in a better spot than a team like Philadelphia. Because in the Eastern Conference, defense is going to continue to rattle off. You have great star power, and you have organizations that maybe aren't as fundamentally sound or maybe not as cohesively built as a team like Philadelphia when it comes to postseason play, but they are an organization that certainly right now has had the same old song and dance over and over and over. It's like watching a rerun of a bad television show that you just can't find the remote and change the channel with. That's what it feels like when you're a Philadelphia team. It doesn't feel that way with a team like Phoenix. So when I look moving forward, Philadelphia has got to land the right hire. Phoenix needs to land a great hire, but they don't need to land the equivalent must-see hire, the can't-miss hire. They have to be able to get somebody who has been able to work with these star powers before to keep this roster afloat. Where in Philadelphia, it's completely different. You need to get somebody that is well-built, has been to championships, has worked with this type of mentality, but also has been able to go ahead and win in certain matchups to keep himself afloat. If I'm a betting man, Philadelphia, they've got to get this hire right if they want to be a contender in 2024.